So for today's subject, we're going to talk about the Masters, Scottie Scheffler, Nelly Korda.
Sit back and get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Dynamic Golf. I'm your co-host, Tim McElvanna, here with my main man up in Boston, Mass., Sean Klotz.
Hey, Dynamic Golf listeners. Great to talk to you guys again. Excited to go through this topic, T-Mac. I think it's going to be a great podcast for some of those players and people that watch golf and don't get a chance to go to the Holy Grail, the museum that we call Augusta.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
How was your experience, T-Mac? I know you were able to get up there. What was that, on the Monday or Tuesday practice round?
I got on up there on the Monday practice round, and I got to be honest, I did like a little video as I was heading on up there, and I was very excited, very nervous at the same time. You know, yep. There's a lot of things going through your mind, especially first, it's a long road trip up there. I'm doing it by myself, and I'm going through rural Georgia.
Sure.
So, you know, probably about 3 or 4 hours into it, where I'm in Georgia and stuff like this, I'm thinking, wow, this is really exciting. And about 10 minutes go by and I go, I hope I don't break down. Because there is nothing out there. But in a unbelievable drive up there and drive back, as much as the experience of seeing Augusta, going through the state of Georgia and through the back roads was just as pretty as well.
It's funny where it's located, you know, it's in that kind of northeast section of Georgia, kind of pretty close to South Carolina. And like you're saying, there's just basically one lane road, you know, both ways, kind of, I think it's Route 25 or something coming off of 60, whatever the numbers are, kind of out of Savannah. But yeah, it's just like you said, farm, church, farm.
Yep.
You know, some logging stuff. But then you get into the city. And then depending on how you come in, if you come off of 20 from Atlanta, you know, you're basically right there if you're coming off of 20. But the way that I think you came in is it's not a very pretty section of town, right?
No, I mean, where I came, I stayed in Waynesboro, which is just south of there, and drove in, you know, not to say anything about Waynesboro, but I wouldn't put it on my destination up there with Orlando or any of those, you know, but, once you get on into it, it is a little, you know, you're using the GPS, you're going there in the middle of the night, basically trying to drive those back roads and stuff like that to try to get into this. But, once you get to Augusta itself, you know, into it, it was very easy to get into and get out of.
T-Mac, that's even part of it too. And it's changed since I've been there, like 2003, 2004. Like what I mean by it's changed is, it's on Washington Street, which is a busy two-lane road with like Walmart and CVS across the street, right? Like
think 301 here in Zephyr Hills,
right? You just don't expect that golf course to be behind the wall or behind the fences of what you're just looking for it to be, like this scenic drive. And even Magnolia Lane, it's literally on the side of you know, you can see it, you can't stop there, they won't let you, but it's right off the sidewalk, essentially.
Yeah, the outside section of Augusta is definitely different than what you imagine. I would say, like, I was expecting something totally different, and it just kind of looked like it was kind of a middle of a downtown, little downtown that you're trying to scroll through and get to. And there's a lot of vendors and a lot of scalpers too.
Yeah, and I've seen. So again, we're gonna go through a lot of the stuff from Augusta, just the memories and kind of the unique experiences. How we really hope maybe some of our listeners have the opportunity to go, or some of the guys who've already had a chance to go. We'll hope to get some good feedback from this one. But I remember one of my years. I mean, John Daly in his RV with his wife, selling his T-shirts outside the CVS, like in that parking lot. That's
really
selling John Daly memorabilia. This is probably around 2009, 2010. And his wife, they're taking Venmo, they're taking cash, selling his like crazy, T-Mac. Just crazy that was happening outside the gates of Augusta.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right? He didn't have the eligibility to get in that year or whatever. went up, made some extra money, went back to West Orange, you know, down in Orlando area.
Well, hey, you know, if that's your, you know, he's got a hell of a brand and a hell of a following. So, you know, go where the action's at. And I don't blame him by one bit, man. But
so you walk in off of Berkman's Road, right? That's the main road that they kind of funnel you in through. And then you said, I think we talked a little bit, like, you know, as a PGA member, again, we're kind of blessed, but we also do this as our profession. So it's part of the reason we do it. Like, you're able to kind of access the one lane that says PGA or, you know, LPGA members, this lane only. And then what I want to get from you is, and try to, you know, give this to our listeners, is essentially when you walk through that little gate, then you start seeing the practice area to your left, and then you start seeing the pro shop to your right. And then kind of you go a little bit over the hill, you see the leaderboard on the right, and then you see the expanse. Like, give me that.
Yeah.
What that did. Because it's chills, right? It's chills in your body. Like,
absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
So we'll start from the beginning. So once you're in line, you know, I'm traveling by myself. You hear a lot of good conversations. Not that, you know, traveling with somebody is a bad idea, but you'd get to hear a lot of stories as you're going through the line, meeting a lot of good people. You know, as you come through, they've got this archway you come through. It's, and they do everything in a very structured way. They get you up to the line. They tell you to where to stop. Everybody's very respectful for what they do. There's a little sign off to the right that says LPGA, PGA. You go on up there. It's absolutely first rate. Everything's first rate from the start to finish. It's just, the service is unbelievable. You walk on in there, and they check you on in. Very seamless, very easy, very, very nice. You come on in and you see this beautiful little building off to the right, and you're like, oh my God, this is, it looks like a Kincaid painting as you're coming through. And right. As you come on up, you come to the left and you see this beautiful driving range, which is absolutely iconic that we see every time on the Golf Channel. And then you come up around the golf shops on the right, which was extremely busy. Cause everybody's getting the collectibles on Monday, for the Masters. And then they did something they'd never done before. They opened up the course at 7:30. They usually do it at 8 o'clock. Oh, they did it at 7:30. Okay. So I got out there a little bit earlier than most. And you see the leaderboard where the guy's working on it. And then you come across there, and it's just, I mean, it's one of those things. You know, you know, you've made it into heaven right there.
Yeah. Yep. It doesn't disappoint. That's the thing. You build it up in your head for so long, and it just doesn't disappoint, you know?
No, it actually exceeds expectations. You know, I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that came out and said, you know, I was really expecting something different. You know, everybody's like, holy cow, you're going to be amazed. It's Disneyland for adults. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a museum. So then where did you go first? Did you go down to the, like, Amen Corner, or did you kind of walk the front nine, or what did you do first?
Yeah. So first thing I did was, I made a beeline pretty much to Amen Corner. You know, I wanted to see everything, especially early in the morning with the sun coming up. And I had my camera with me, which, you're allowed to during those days, practice days, to bring a camera. Don't bring a GoPro, but you can bring a camera. I wanted to get all those early morning pictures with the sunlight and got on down there. And it's just, you know, when you think of the Masters, you know, I don't think there's any 3-hole stretch that's more iconic than that. And, you know, you talk to anybody, they're like, yeah, that's what I remember about, you know, the Masters, you know, especially those 3 holes.
So when you're, first of all, again, you know, we don't have to go hole by hole, but we could spend 3 hours doing this podcast. You walk down number 10, you've watched this since you were 5 years old or whatever. You can't describe number 10 to people as far as the descent, right?
It's the coolest hole. I just want to play it. You know what I mean? That number 6, I just want to just go and just play it over and over and over again because of the elevation and the look that you get. I mean, the look up there is just beautiful. You're seeing everything and you're going right down into this valley that's encouraging you to play this beautiful draw. I just wish every hole was like that.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to play 10 because I still play my fade T-Mac. So I don't know how I draw it around the corner, but it's a pretty, you know, you can tell how the players can gain, you know, as you're watching them, they can gain 40, 50 yards with roll. They might carry it because they're hitting a lot of 3 woods off that 470 yard par 4 or whatever, but they're rolling it. 40, 50 yards to some type of almost like not bottom of the hill, but they're getting that down there.
Yeah, I mean,
But
I guess the other thing that I found out about 10, as far as the beauty and the drive that you've got there is that, when you look at Rory's big nasty hook that he hit there, it's hardly even 100 yards. I mean, the camera made it seem like, oh, it's kind of down there a little bit. But when you look at it, you're like, holy cow, he just, he hit that in the cabbage. He snap hooked that thing.
Yeah, and those cabins are beautiful, but they're not in play. But for him on that day on number 10, they were in play because he hit it that far left.
Right.
And then seeing Bubba's shot, if you go down, I think you told me you did, right? You went down to so now Bubba Watson hits this shot from the right trees, we'll call it, maybe 120 yards away, I think he was.
Yeah.
But he's dead. He's got nothing. There's no way to even contemplate doing what he did.
He's literally going out, almost 90 degrees parallel to his target. And it's amazing because if he isn't left-handed, I don't think anybody can make
correct.
That stroke. And obviously, if you're not Bubba Watson, you would never even imagine that stroke. But it's, you look at it and you look at the hole, you look back at it and you're like, who had the joystick on that? That's a video game thing. So, I think when you start looking at stuff like that, how much these guys are able to bend the ball and control their distance under that pressure.
Yeah.
You're like, I have no chance.
Right. That's a great point. Like me and you go do that in a practice round, maybe, but to actually have the gumption to do it during the event, to know that, and he had to make that shot that really propelled him to the win.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of those instances. That's why it's such a great tournament. I mean, that's why it separates itself mostly, I'm going to say for me, but also I'm going to say probably for you now too. US Opens are unbelievable, super hard. PGA Champions, really cool. British Opens, great, fantastic. But they change courses every year, so you don't get that consistency of, do you remember where Phil Mickelson was on number 13 when he hit the 5-iron out of the pine straw onto the green? Like, you don't get that because you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's such a rich history to go back to these iconic spots and see these shots. Because it does get, as you say, like the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship, we remember the shot, but I guarantee you nobody remembers the course, what hole, half the time. But, at Augusta, we've seen it so many times, it's just burned in our memory.
We're golf enthusiasts. We work in the industry. We make money. We pay our bills through this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I could not name you one of the last five U.S. Open golf courses, right? Like, I just couldn't. Might be able to tell you who won them, but it's still, I know Koepka's won a couple, but I there's not a memory, but I remember Scottie Scheffler. I remember, Jon Rahm. I remember obviously Tiger in 2009. Like you have that associated with almost the year. Oh yeah. Mickelson won twice. Like you just have that memory in your head because of the golf course.
The golf course and the pageantry too. I mean, it's always, you always remember the guy that's getting the green jacket the year before. You know what I mean? There's just something about it. The whole thing just burns in your mind where, I guess the only reason I remember the PGA Championship is because Colin Morikawa, the top fell off and you just kind of remember that, what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the U.S. Open that, what's his name? One where he had Bird Guy run in front of him.
Right.
You know, those are the ones I kind of remember a little bit, but the
British
Masters
Open with John. British Open with John Vandeveld making a triple on the last hole. Like, but that's not a positive memory. It's not,
No, that's the thing is most of the time it's not a positive memory is why we come back to those. So that's why I like about the Masters is that it comes back, as you said, year after year to a tradition that it's just absolutely timeless.
So try to explain to our listeners. So for me, one of the things when I get back up there, and I will get back up there, is almost every fairway is tilted the wrong way for the shot you're trying to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So my examples are 14, 17, which are holes that because 13, 15, 16 are so iconic, 12, obviously, 11. 11 is even a one that I could just put in that category. So
yeah.
On 14, it's a slight dog leg to the left, and the fairway is tilted to the right. like, and it's just awkward. It's just awkward enough where you have to be so aware of what you're doing. So it's not just bomb it, you know, like Bryson was doing a pretty good job of bombing it. He was hitting some ridiculously, the drive he hits on 13 on Saturday, I tried to explain that to people over the week. You understand it now because you've been there, but you can't describe that drive to people who have not been there. To hit that ball over the trees on 13, over the 14th fairway into the trees between 14 and 15. Like,
it's
ridiculous.
It's unbelievable, you know, and with Bryson doing stuff like that, it kind of comes back to the idea of what Fred really saying, you know, of expanding the course a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but you know what these guys are able to do, you know, like the shoot at 18 to hit through that, I mean, that's a hotel hallway. Good luck with that. But Bobby did a great job, or Allerson McKenzie did a great job of making sure that you had the opposite lie to the green that you were coming into. So if the slope was back to front or right to left, he put you on a slope that was left to right. So you had to, you had to work your ball. You just couldn't rely on the slope to make the turn for you. You had to have some talent, some club.
Yeah. One of the holes that I think gets missed again, because they don't show it so much, but I think five is one of the great golf holes I've ever seen. What do you think about number five? Like,
tough. That's what I thought. Of
right?
It. Really,
like,
tough.
Where do you go? Where do you drive it?
Yeah.
The bunkers in the fairway are ridiculously deep. You don't want to go in those bunkers on the left. And then the green is arguably one of the hardest greens out there, which is a pretty good conversation to have, but it's got 2 to 3 tiers to it, depending on kind of where you're landing the ball. But it's just not a hole that's shown a lot because it's always back nine at Augusta type of stuff. Like you said, from six on, you start kind of knowing eight to par five up the hill, but five is just such a great hole. That's just, that's one of those I'd like to know what the, you know, par, like the scoring averages over par on that hole, because it's not birdies. They're not making a ton of birdies in that hole. They're definitely trying to make a four and go.
Yeah, number five is, you know, I got back there and I took a look at number five. I watched Dustin Johnson play that hole, and it's an absolute beast to get it out there to the fairway. You could hide a car inside those bunkers without a doubt. I saw one of the guys go in there and rake it, and I was literally just seeing the top of his forehead. And I wouldn't say he was a tall guy, but he was a medium-sized guy. And then, you know, the fall off on the green is just severe everywhere. I mean, it's just sloping, you know, severely to the left over there, where everything kind of falls off, and you've got, you know, you've got to hit it to a perfect zone, cause there's little zones on there. But yeah, and the slope is, if I remember right, was really right to left. So you've got to play a draw into something that might take a fade or something like that.
Right. I think there. So again, from 2003, when I was there the first time, because number 11, I'm going to go back to 11. Sorry, we're skipping all over the place, there's just so much cool history to talk about. So number 11 was not 515 yard par four when I got there in 2003. The reason it became that long was because of the Tiger effect that, you know, that like you said, Fred Ridley, they just wanted to, they didn't like when he shot, what it was, a 19 under or whatever the number was, like he set the scoring record.
Yeah, he smashed the scoring record.
But, you know, so they just tried to make, so they've made 13 longer in the past 2 years because they bought land from Augusta Country Club, which is an interesting thing. I don't, you probably saw that behind 12 and behind 13, there's this other ridiculously private fancy golf course right behind 12 and 13.
Yeah.
And what they do is they wanted to make 13 longer, so they buy part of that property of the Augusta Country Club, and they decide to make it whatever it is, maybe 530 now instead of 490 for number 13. But number 11's hard enough, is my point.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't need to be 505 yards down a hill with a huge pond to your left with no bailout other than right, which is what you see on Sunday. They all bail out right of that green. They're gonna trip it up, you know.
Well, the big thing is when you take a look at number 11 and you look back at it, you've got this mound of pine trees to the right. The slope is severely right to left. And most of the time what these guys are doing now is that they're trying to play this big massive cut to get up around the thing. which leaves them with a very severe slope into it. And then you're looking at this tiny, I wouldn't say a tiny little pond, but you're looking at this pond over there, that's getting larger and larger, as the slope, you know, continues on. So you'll see a lot of guys, and I would too, I would just bail out to the right towards where number 12 is, if you know what I mean. And I would just, you know, probably chili dip something onto the green and try to three putt.
That's what I mean. And by the way, those trees on the right that you're talking about, 11, they weren't there. They weren't there 15 years ago. They put them in.
Wow. And that's same amazing, because it just looks
they're huge,
like they've been there for 1,000 years. You know what I mean?
Nope. After about 2004 is when they started planting them, and then they basically brought them in at, we'll call it, mature size, and they've become that in the past 10 years.
Wow.
Because they just it's just, you know, that they can do whatever they want. They shut down. I think their membership only has access to the course for about 3 months out of the year. I think they shut down after the tournament, and then basically they're open from maybe like July through September is what I've heard. I don't know if you heard anything from the.
Yeah, that's what I've kind of heard from, you know, through the thing, is that they're kind of open during the summer, because there's a lot of people that have been asking like, hey, what about another tournament? But I think Augusta is set for television for, you know, that 2-3 week period of time where it's really looking what they want everybody to remember. And I, you know, and you can tell when you looked at the course back in November, when they played it in November during COVID, it was beautiful, but it wasn't sparkling azaleas. No, it was, you know, so I think when you talk to the guys at Augusta and stuff like this, they would love to have more tournaments there, but for what they want everybody to remember the Masters for, is it really only has that window of 2-3 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, it's unique. I certainly encourage anybody and whoever you can. I know this is the lottery. I've purchased tickets for a lot of our members in the past, or just friends on eBay and kind of these websites. I've gotten burned one time, by the way, and so definitely be aware of who you're buying from. You know, bought some tickets that weren't real. But yeah, just, I don't know how you do it anymore, because the prices have escalated so much again in the past 10 years, basically.
Well, the one thing I saw a lot of, and, you know, I wouldn't encourage this, but this is what I kind of saw a lot of, is people just kind of hanging around the exits, because everybody can go in and out, twice. So a lot of people, you know, you're coming on out and they're like, hey, are you going back in? And da, 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 da. You know, so,
hey, I've got a number in my phone right now, T-Mac, of a scalper that I use every time I'm in going to Augusta. I'll call him up 2 to 3 weeks prior. He'll tell me what the prices are. I'll call him up 3 days prior. He'll tell me what the prices are, but I know his tickets are valid.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it is what it is. There's a certain distance that they have to stay away from the entrance. But you will start seeing some guys, whatever that number is, you know, yardage away from the entrance. But
I saw quite a number of scalpers as I was going down. I think it's Washington or something like that, as they're coming on down and stuff like that. So, but hey, you know, there again, you're taking a risk. You could be giving some guy $1,300 and get to the gates and thank you. You know, there's a lot of cool things there. Number 6, I thought was great too. It's a very elevated green, or a very elevated tee box, to a green down below. That little area out to the right where they put that Sunday pin placement, that's tough, man. That's if they're putting it within, you know, birdie length for that, then they hit an amazing shot.
Right. And you say that, and it's again, like, hard to describe. It's a plateau on top of the green. Like, the green's got two tiers, arguably maybe three, because the top left is even a slightly different tier than the bottom. But that top right pin where that plateau is, it's probably, what do you think, maybe 20 by 20, like where they can hit it into?
Yeah, I'd say something like that, probably.
And they're hitting 6 irons or 7 irons. Like, it's not a short hole.
No, it's like 187. Yeah.
Right.
186. Yep. I mean, they're hitting, you know, this control cut, you know, 7 or 6 iron in there. And you've got to, it's got to stop too. I mean, it's not one of those things you just kind of land it there and it'll stay there. It domes off all around.
and that behind it is almost an acceptable miss, but then that's a really tricky little putt chip, whatever you're going to do from that grass to because you got to make sure it doesn't go down the bottom, because now you're making five or something if it ever happens to go down the bottom plateau. So
absolutely,
there's just so many unique. We haven't even gotten to 16 where Tiger makes the chip. Did you able to get down there and see the guys skipping and stuff?
Well, my funny story about Tiger is that I went to go, they said they was going to tee off at a certain time. I can't remember what it was. So I got down behind one green thinking, oh, I'll get back over here. So he decided he was going to go to 10. Okay. We'll go to 10. So I'm chucking on down to 10 and he goes on by and I missed him at 10. They say, hey, he's, where's he at now? And I hear this huge roar and I guess he's skipping a ball over on 16.
Oh, okay.
So I jump on over and go to 16. I say, where's Tiger at? And he says, he's done for the day. So I think he only played two holes or a couple shots and warmed up, but I did see his caddy out there marking the course doing his job. But, Tiger didn't have much of a warm up on Monday.
No, it's, he played well, you know, that Friday round that he played 27 holes. People don't realize how good he played because that was the windy conditions and the tough, and they had to play 27, and he played super solid that Friday. But I think almost him trying to make the cut and get that record of what is it, 24 straight?
25.
25 straight. I think he probably won't ever admit, but I think that meant something to him. Oh. So he put a lot of energy into Friday because Saturday and Sunday he was spent.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. And I think, we got to get to when we talk about Tiger's round on Friday and the wind conditions, you also got to talk about, I mean, I walked that course on Monday and when I got back home, I couldn't walk for the next 2 days. So it's right. Not, it's like trekking the Appalachians. I mean, it's really up and down. Is. So, I mean, for him to have the problems that he has with his legs, to play in those cold, windy conditions, to walk that course is a true testament. And if you're not a true golf fan, then, find the door, get out of here. Cause, that was impressive, man. I mean, I know it wasn't, it wasn't what we all wanted, but, it is a true testament how hard and it is to do that.
What I heard from Thursday to Friday of the coverage was basically like he had like 6 hours of spacing because he's got to get up around 3 a.m. to get ready for his 6:45. He teed off at early, like 7:15 or something Friday morning because he had to finish. So he just kind of gets a bad draw as far as what happens, but again, that's kind of one of the things we talk about sometimes on our podcast, like the amount of work these guys put in prior. Now he's doing extra because of his physical limitations, but they don't go from the car to the first tee like many of our listeners, right?
Correct.
Or like us every once in a while, not every once in a while, unfortunately, is what we do sometimes too. Why does it take us 3 or 4 holes to warm up? Because we're not going to the range. We're not chipping, hitting putts, he's exceptional because of what he has to do with his body, but at the same time, every morning, 6:30, 7 o'clock, you see those guys out there chipping, hitting balls. To me, as the golfer who's, kind of a pretty good 4 handicap now, or whatever, I'm just like, you guys know how to hit a chip shot. What are you still doing practicing every morning? But guess what? They're out there practicing every morning.
And I think for them, they're getting a feel. They're going through their routine, when we talk to our clients, I mean, they're jumping in the cart, they're choking down a sandwich or they're, chugging down Coke or something like that. The thing I think people need to understand is that how much they prepare, how much they practice and how much they put into like their nutrition and their sleep. It's amazing. I talk to some of my guys and I'm like, well, what are you kind of putting into your body or what type of practice? And it's just a blank stare. Like, what do you mean? We're supposed to do, what do you mean? For him to go out there and to perform like that, and get his body activated at 3 a.m. to 3 hours ahead. I mean,
yeah.
God, we'd be happy if our guys got there 30 minutes ahead.
Yeah, we I know we sometimes sound like we're on the soapbox of golf lesson stuff, but it is like you get what you put into it. So when you tell your buddy, "Hey, I took some lessons from Sean Klotz, and you know what? They really didn't help me." How much did you put into practice after we did the lesson, or did you go do like what we told you to do, which was okay for a month? You're just going to go hit 7 irons or less, and you're just going to work on the one move, and then come back for another lesson. But
Yeah.
you know, the instant gratification of the public in general on a lot of things in general. So yeah, maybe the lesson, without being too negative, is just if you want better results, well then put more action into the process, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, work on the small things, as you said. How many times, even when you're given a lesson, you're like, okay, I just want you to hit this small little shot. And the third shot in, they're full swinging it, and
They're
you're
in
like,
full,
wait a
right?
minute,
Yeah.
so you got to put the practice, the discipline to practice. I think that's it. So it's amazing what those guys are able to do. And if you want to get to that next level, that what do they all tell us? I want to be consistent. Well, those are the things that you have to do to be consistent, not just getting a
Correct.
lesson for an
Correct.
hour and then or 30 minutes and then hitting a shag ball and saying, okay,
Yeah.
I'm a scratch golfer.
Or going to the course and, you know, expecting it to be in there. It's not in there yet. It's going to
No.
take you, you know, a month to get in there of just that move. But going to the consistency, going to that kind of conversation, it's been pretty impressive the last, what, 6 weeks, what Nelly Korda slash Scottie Scheffler have just done in the golf world.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And, just winning like crazy. I mean, I think if Scottie Scheffler would have won that one in the middle at
Yeah.
Texas, he'd be on a 5-run. And we'd be talking about Byron Nelson's record. We'd be talking about Tiger's record on consecutive wins. Just amazing. And then you look at Nelly Korda. I think, was she have 5 in a row or
She
something
had
like
five in a
that?
row, a major last week. Like, and part of this, so two things. So the demeanor that they have on the golf course never changes. And they
No.
talk about that with Scheffler quite a bit. And Korda, like they just don't get up and down, right?
Yeah.
They just, and that's when I play with golfers at my club, when you play with golfers, when we're working with people, if you're gonna get so mad, you know what? This might be a good junior. This might be, we've been doing a lot of junior league camps and kind of, we also did caddy orientation at the golf course last week. So I've been kind of hanging out with call like 12-year-old to 16-year-old kids a lot. That's a little awkward as a 53-year-old man to say, but in a golf world, in the golf
It's
world,
acceptable.
right. But you know, even like the 'cause they're mimicking what they see on TV,
Absolutely.
right? So it's just, my analogy right now would probably be the NBA basketball player. It's hard to watch the playoffs because of how much they whine every time they think they get fouled.
Yes.
And when you go to a pickup game on the side of, you know, in a neighborhood, and you see the kids playing, it's similar. So, overall point, again, not soapbox, not trying to get on that, is if you're consistent with your attitude and your demeanor and kind of your expectation level, and take the game for what it is. If, you know, if the whole goal is to come out here, be friends with your buddies, have a little 2-hour game, camaraderie, that's perfect. No problems. Just, but if the expectation as the 15, 16-year-old golfer is to try to get to high school golf and then college golf and then see what happens, your level has to be on a same even keel. You can't be up and down because you're gonna create more strokes on the golf course and shoot yourself into an 80 quicker than you're ever gonna shoot yourself into a 68.
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing and what you're getting to is that if you keep that same demeanor, and I've been kind of doing a lot of study and research on this here recently, you get to
Okay.
stay in what we call the zone, right? I mean, you get to keep your mind at, basically a good beta level where it's not too high, not too low. We focus on the process. We're not worried about the outcome. The days of joy, we're kind of walking through, everything just seems to fall in place, the zone. And I think
Right.
that's what these guys are, and ladies, I'm sorry, are able to do, is that they keep their mindset and their consistency and their attitude the same, which in turn, I think just keeps their mind, not racing around and getting panicky and worrying about the results as much as they are about the process.
Yeah. They, with all that being said, both those players we're talking about, and I've seen it in the last 2 weeks, their short game is, if not the best on tour, one of the top 10 or whatever. So they never really get themselves into too much trouble because they can get up and down if they get in trouble. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the big thing, I think, for Scottie Scheffler is I think he always had that, but now he's starting to see the putts roll in. And adios, folks. I'll see you later.
Yep. So his confidence grows. And that happens to you and me when we play too. If, you know, if we make the first 5-footer on the first hole, we're going to start feeling good about making putts throughout the round. If we miss the first one, we, you know, it may not be as smooth as it might take us a few more holes to get going. But I played with a gentleman yesterday, kind of a classic, I'm going to say like a classic 7.5, 8 handicap golfer.
Okay.
He's one under through six. And he always says to me on the sixth green, he goes, I have not been one under through six.
Here it comes.
Almost ever. And he goes, bogey, bogey, bogey. Right? He finishes up two over. And I said to him walking off number nine, I said, hey, if I tell you you shoot 38 on the front side, are you happy? Oh, yeah, I'd be happy. But now I'm not mad because I went bogey. No. You don't get to have it both ways. If your goal is to shoot two more, you know, two less than your handicap or to break 80 or whatever those numbers that you're trying to do, you know, you've got to treat it like in the kind of, again, as we were talking those last three holes, on number eight, he hits a drive dead left. He hits makes his first bogey on seven. So now he's back to even.
Okay.
That's fine for an eight handicap after seven holes.
Yeah.
He hits his drive dead left into some trees. And he's like, oh, I got this window. And I said, no, you don't have a window anymore, sir. Your goal is to make bogey at this point. There's no more window. You got to pitch out. You got to hit the ball on the front, on the green, and two putt and make five and then move on. And he did it and he made the five. But I think if I wasn't there, he would have tried some three hybrid around the corner or something, you know.
Correct. You know, but it gets back to what you're talking about with practice. Even that guy gets into trouble. If he gets, you know, up to in front of the green and he's working on his short game other than the range game, you know, you give yourself, you know, especially like Scotty and Nelly now. I mean, if they get themselves in trouble, they don't try to take off more than they can chew. And I think that's the big thing for our listeners to understand is play manageable golf. Put it, you know, 50 yards outside of the green or 25 yards away from the green. Give yourself a chance for that par. But you're right. If he would have gone with a hybrid, I mean, we're bringing in double, triple, or, you know, maybe an X.
This is my last little thing I'll say about all the Scottie Scheffler, Nelly Korda mental strength to it is, and I didn't even know this stat. I just was watching the last 4 or 5 weeks with Scheffler. Mm-hmm. And I said to my friend, I'm like, you know what he does better than anybody right now is he makes a bogey, his next hole is a birdie.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize he led the tour in that stat, which is literally bogey after birdie. Stat we usually call it in reverse, right? We call bounce it the back. ABFU, the PBFU. We can't say it on air, but the post-birdie screw-up type of thing.
We call it the bounce-back stat, right? I mean, that's what we call it, right? But we know what it is.
But he does it the other way, right? Which is that's what Tiger had.
Correct.
So much better. And now they're starting to – they see him on the leaderboard in court of Shurum, so it's the same way. Like, uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh, I mean –
I can't catch him.
I mean, Korda's winning by large margins too, walking away with victories.
You know,
Scotty's doing the same too. And they're not, you know, the thing is that they're not just winning like, you know, the Puerto Rican Open, you know what I mean? They're winning, you know, the Bay Hill and majors and you know, the players and stuff like that. They're winning at the highest level. That they can and performing just admirably. And their stats show it when you look at their stats.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know in my lifetime. I'm sure it's happened. I just don't remember it because, again, I said it to somebody this week. I don't remember when a Masters winner won the next week because typically they take that week off because it's so much, you know, press media coverage. You're so invested in that tournament.
Yeah,
I don't see them usually going out. And it's funny because on Thursday at the RBC, He shanked a ball out of the bunker and he made like a double, but guess what he did the next hole? He made birdie.
Yeah.
And then I look up on Sunday and he's 20 under par and I'm like, what? How did he was two over on Thursday afternoon at like four holes into it.
Yeah. I mean, he does a great job of whatever mistake he makes. He just doesn't carry the baggage over to the next hole, and it's just a brand new hole, and it's looking for a birdie every time. I mean, just unflappable.
And there is got to be some shout out to the caddies too. Both their caddies are perfectly set for their personalities, bringing them along. That is that caddy, you know, player relationship that Nicklaus had with his caddy.
Absolutely.
That basically Tiger had with Stevie. Those guys are both like fired up, super exciting, you know, super excited people, Stevie and Tiger. Mm-hmm. So perfectly fit for that 10-year category.
Yeah.
But Ted Scott is the even keel, don't get out of your way type of thing. Keep staying in the moment. And it's cool to watch right now. Somebody told me yesterday, it was like, it's kind of boring. I kind of don't like watching Scotty anymore. I'm like, what? You got Larry Bird in your presence. You got Michael Jordan in your presence. Watch it.
I mean, it's like watching a no hitter. I mean, you might not be watching home runs, but you're watching a no hitter, guys. Let's get in and bunker in and watch this. You're watching something at the highest level that, you know, we rarely get to see. You know, and when we do, we should get very excited about it.
So the big lesson for the audience is figure out how to bring some of that into your game, whatever that is, you know, whatever that piece is that you can see when you watch those guys. I don't care about his right foot moving. Doesn't matter. Through impact, he's as good as anybody. He just looks a little different at the end. It's a great, it's obviously a very, very structurally beautiful golf swing.
So. I mean, when you look at his path to the face to path, I mean, he keeps that face square for so long. It's unbelievable. You know, I mean, we teach, you know, a little face rotation because most of our students just leave the face wide open. Right. Mm-hmm. He does a great job of, you know, pretty much 6 inches before to 6 inches after that club is just absolutely square and just, you know, railroad tracks down the middle every time.
I like how his arms and Korda does this. Korda's got we'll call it the more classic, beautiful, you know, simple golf swing.
Yes.
But I love how both of them, and again, good sign of good players, their arms stay away from their bodies a long, long time, you know, setup wise, backswing wise, at impact wise, follow through wise. And again, from what we teach from people that come to us, hey, I want some more distance. Well, if you want more distance, you have to have extension.
Correct.
Period. You can't have your arms coming, your hands coming close to your body after impact, you know, before impact, after impact. You got to extend your arms. Think about the fighter. Yeah. You know, the best fighters have had good extension with their arms. They've never had short arm. And that's maybe a good takeaway for our guy, you know, guys and girls to take away for their weekend practice or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you got to keep the hand path, you know, as I have always taught, you know, keep your hands as far away from your sternum as possible.
Yeah.
You know, you know, if your hands start, your radius to your sternum starts getting a little shorter, then the elbows start moving in, the low point starts moving. So I've always just kind of, you know, kept with the idea of keeping my hands as far away from my sternum as I can. And but just again, thinking of width.
Same sport or a different sport, right? Tennis, baseball, like those sports are all the same way. The best servers don't have their arms close to their, like, it's always baseball. You've got to get your arms extended to be able to hit the home run. So just relate that to the golf swing. If you just went and worked on, maybe to tie up all this conversation, if you just went and worked on that with a 7-iron for a month, and just did that, you'd be a better driver of the golf ball by June, period. Like, you know, it's going to transfer into the other parts of your game.
Absolutely. No question. Absolutely. So. Absolutely. John, I appreciate it. I had a great time today. I think the viewers got a good snapshot of what Augusta was today. Kind of, you know, some of the little insides and outsides of Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler and their consistency. So anything good you would like to add before we break for today's session?
No, just kind of have a purpose when you go practice, you know, think about something. Don't be, don't just go out there and hit balls. There's a big difference between hitting balls and going out there and having a purpose with it. So, you know, watch the people on TV. They're up there for a reason. And then if you ever have a chance, don't turn it down. Get to Augusta.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to thank everybody for listening. This is your co-host, Tim McElvanna, and my fellow co-host, Sean Klotz.
Great talking to you guys. Look forward to the next one, T-Mac.
All right. We'll see you guys next Friday, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Are you looking to elevate your golf game? With SwingTheoryGolf.com, you will. Tim, who is a certified PGA professional, offers expert instruction and personal attention to help you unleash your true potential. So get ready to tee off with Swing Theory Golf.